Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. Welcome to the show. Should be a good one. Jason Nathanson will be joining us in a few moments, or as you refer to him, Nathan Jasonson.
I said that on the air?
You said it, well, did you say it on the air? You said it off the air a couple times already today.
What I say off the air is for off the air.
Oh, is that off the air?
Well, go ahead, say it on the air then.
Yeah. Either Jason Nathanson or Nathan Jasonson will join us in a few moments to tell us what's going on in Disneyland as they open a new world, Star Wars Galaxy's Edge.
In Disneyland?
Yes. There's Land first and then August in World, and I am shocked Jimmy Mack has not called a family vacation.
Very surprising.
Aren't
what
you?
Is he waiting for?
We were thinking of going sometime in July, but I have to find out with Jason. I mean, can you even get on the ride?
There's a lot of specifics that he'll cover because it's not going to be easy for a while because this is highly anticipated. This is a combination of Disney and Star Wars together. So, the lines are going to be, it's going to be like Mount Everest times 10.
So can I just say that, and I admit I don't get it, but for someone who doesn't get it, that is the silliest thing to hear. You know,
it is the what?
It's just it's silly for me to understand that there are going to be huge lines all summer to go on this ride.
Well, it's more than just a ride. It's I believe it's three rides and a whole new designated
so it's like
land,
a sub park kind of thing.
Yes, yeah.
An experience.
It's an Wendy. It's an experience. That's what it is.
And here's the thing: I've seen every Star Wars movie maybe once, definitely once, maybe twice.
Yes.
Unlike Jim, who's seen it 500 times, he lives it, breathes it, loves it. The kids like it.
Right.
But this is still kind of exciting for me. I realize, Steve, as we were talking about this before, you didn't see it when it first came out.
Right.
I'm not a sci-fi fan.
Well, right, and don't misunderstand me. I'm not putting it down at all.
Oh,
right.
I know.
I mean, I think it's great, but it's just it's hard for me to understand it.
Yeah.
But the Star Wars audience and fans are so unbelievably loyal.
Sure.
And it spans the globe.
Right.
I mean, there is a universal love for Star Wars.
Yeah, this can't miss. Luckily, Friends of the Park didn't close this thing down before I had a chance to show what it had.
It was too close to the Pacific.
Right. Friends of the Amusement Park. That's a different group.
Right.
I don't know what say they have in all this. Now, in California, it'll be in Disneyland, but in Florida, it will not be in what we call the Magic Kingdom part. It's in their Animal Kingdom amusement park.
Which I like.
Park.
And,
yeah.
You know, I can never talk anybody into going there because everything's Magic Kingdom.
Right, right. But, boy, it looks so cool. I've seen pictures of it. Of course, I've not experienced it yet, but I've seen pictures of it, and the pictures look like you're right in the middle of the movie, which is, that's their goal.
Behind the helm of the Millennium Falcon looks pretty darn cool.
Yes.
Now, did you do the Star Wars rides at Disney World or Land? I think World.
Yeah. Star Tours?
Yeah.
That one? Yeah.
I did that, and I can't believe I didn't get motion sickness.
Yeah, for people who have never been on it, it's a flight simulator.
It's really cool.
Yeah,
your seats move.
Fun.
It's
yeah.
like you're really immersed in
yes.
this. I can only imagine that this is going to be like a million times better.
Oh, yeah. They're using state-of-the-art technology. We'll ask Jason the exact cost of it, but I saw it exceeding $1 billion to build this. That's a lot of money.
Does George Lucas go on this before it's open to the public? I'm just curious.
I don't know.
Just to go, hey, what do you think?
Oh, that's a great... ask Nathan Jasonson that, because he'll know more than me.
I said that as a joke. Now you know what you do?
You're doomed now, buddy.
I know. He does this to me all the time. We get guest pronunciations, and Jasmine will say, here's how you say it, and Bill will say something totally unrelated, and then it's sitting there ready to come out.
Oh, that'd be horrible if that happened in a few minutes.
It is Nathan, though, right?
Yeah, Nathan Jasonson.
Okay, good.
That's right.
I got it.
When he's on, make sure.
I just really don't find it to be fun when you team up. You know, it's just not
we
fun.
Don't.
You look like bullies.
We're not teaming up.
Which, by the way, the term bully is thrown around way too much, and I don't like it.
But in this case, I think it applies.
It does apply here,
we are
Wendy.
Bullies here. We are...
Say it loud, say it proud.
Tell Nathan.
Right.
Bullies.
He's our ringleader, Nathan Jasonson.
Shut right. up! So now, what's his name? You're a jerk.
All right. One of those guys will join us in a minute and tell us about Star Wars, about the new Star Wars land in Disneyland. Stick around. It's Bill and it's Wendy, right? Bill and Wendy, yes, on WGN. People say because?
Some do.
They do?
All right. Big news in the Star Wars universe. Today is the day Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and ABC News Entertainment correspondent. One of my favorites is live in Los Angeles right now, Jason Nathanson. Jason, you did it.
I did it. I'm here. I think they say Bacon here.
Though well, they do say Bacon in other parts of the galaxy.
With Bacon. Yeah, that seems to work. Everything has a weird name, so why not?
You're getting to experience things before anyone else does. It officially opens tomorrow morning, right?
Yes.
Yeah?
Correct. It officially opens tomorrow. I am here right now inside Star Wars Galaxy's Edge on the planet of Batuu. Throughout this week, they've been giving us previews of everything. So on Tuesday, I got to ride the ride. I got to taste all the food. I got to drink the blue milk. I got to see droids being made and everything. And what people are probably most interested in when they come in, the first thing they're going to run to is the Millennium Falcon ride.
It's that looks so cool.
Here. There's two rides, but this is the only one that's going to be open. The other one's going to be open in a couple months, but this is the only one. And it's a motion simulator ride. So if you've been on, say, Star Tours, if you've been to Disneyland before, or they have motion simulator rides everywhere, you get in and there's six people, and you're actually piloting the Millennium Falcon. So you the two front seats, that's where if you sit there, you're the pilot. So you're Han Solo or Chewbacca, and it's completely interactive. So there's if you want to go to light speed, you push a lever forward to actually go to light speed. If you're in the second two seats where I was, you're the gunner. So you're pushing a button that's actually firing lasers or firing missiles. And then if you're in the back two seats, you're an engineer. So you're doing math or something. I don't know what you're doing in the back two seats because it seems kind of boring. But if you get motion sick like I do.
I do too.
I popped a Dramamine beforehand. I was fine, but pro tip here, sit in the back two seats. It'll be less of that experience.
Yeah, because I guess right up front and center would really, really knock you out.
Jason,
right, exactly.
The estimate that I read said that for the first week it's open, that the line is estimated to be somewhere between 4 to 6 hours to get on this ride. Are you hearing the same thing, and is it worth that long of a wait?
You know what? That might be possible. You know, I got to say, for all those people out there who want to be jealous of me, we don't know because we don't have lines here right now. It's fantastic. It's just us in here, which is such a surreal experience to be in here without any people. But so for the first month, or almost the first month, until June 23rd, in order to be in here, you have to have made a reservation. And once you've made a reservation, you get 4 hours to explore the place. So that's how they're trying to kind of keep those lines down. I'm sure the lines are still going to be long. I don't know if it's going to be 4 to 6 hours. I would imagine after when it opens to the full public, definitely that's going to be the case, that those lines are going to be that long. But, you know, I don't know.
How do they know you've been there more than 4 hours?
That's a fantastic question. You have a wristband that's going to tell in some kind of sophisticated way, you know.
And so it'll tighten and cut off your circulation after 4 hours?
Exactly. Okay. And then Chewbacca comes by and he rips your arm off.
Oh, no.
You've been in there too long.
That's horrible.
Or a stormtrooper comes and escorts you out.
Oh.
Or something. There is some method. I don't know exactly what that method's going to be, though.
All right.
That's till June 23rd You need to make reservations. Now, I'm married to a Star Wars aficionado and his podcast, Rebel Force Radio. We want to go out there in July. Is it even worth trying to get on it?
I mean, yeah, you're going to want to. This is going to be the thing that you want to see. Now, pro tip, if you don't have a reservation, it is my understanding, and I would check this out for yourself, but it's my understanding if you try to come before the 23rd. If you stay at one of the, I think there's two or three hotels attached right to Disneyland. If you stay at one of those hotels, you can get into the park. That's going to be very expensive from what I understand. The Grand California Hotel, which is one of the best hotels here, was going for last night $800 a night, and the thing isn't even open yet. So it's going to be very expensive. If you're coming after the 23rd, I mean, yeah, you're just going to get here early. It's summer months, and Disneyland is always packed. I mean, just jam-packed on a regular day. So you add Star Wars into the mix, and it's going to be pretty chaotic.
So say you're not a Star Wars fan. I mean, I know that there's a... Don't look at me. I mean, I've seen the movies.
Right.
I don't live it and love it.
Yeah.
But for people who aren't 100% immersed into Star Wars, is this still pretty cool and enjoyable?
Yeah, because I'd put myself in that category. I'm a casual fan. I've seen all the movies. I enjoy certain things about it. I love the droids. The BB-8 is... I love that character. I think it's very cool. But there's a lot of stuff here that I'm definitely missing. Little signs and because, I mean, this world is so immersive and crazy. So if you are a diehard fan, You're going to love it. You're going to want to spend 4 hours here or more checking everything out because it's also an interactive experience. There's an app you download. When you come in, you choose whether or not you want to be part of the resistance or the first order. And then you can go around and interact with certain things around the land that will change your experience. For instance, if you're on that Millennium Falcon and you have the app, it'll kind of rate you how well you flew the ship, and then that will correspond to other things in the land. So if you want to have that experience, fantastic. Go at it. You'll love it. If you just want to come in and check things out, you could probably do the whole thing in an hour, depending on how long it takes you to get on the ride. You look at all the other stuff, and then, you know, you could have a cocktail. It's the first time in Disneyland you can actually have a drink. Yeah.
Oh, I'm there.
There's beer, there's mixed drinks. You have to drink them in Star Wars Land, but you can do that as well. There's tons of stuff to eat, and there's tons of stuff to buy. I mean, really cool things to buy. So if you want a lightsaber, you can customize your own lightsaber, and this is the only place you can get these things. So you can't buy the lightsaber somewhere else outside of here. And it's fully customizable to the point where you can put jewels on it and different colors. And there's 120,000 permutations of how you can customize your lightsaber. That'll cost you $200.
They're going to make a fortune with this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I mean, it cost $1 billion to make this thing, so they got to make their money back somehow.
You mentioned blue milk earlier, Jason.
Yes.
For people who don't know, in the first Star Wars, in New Hope, that's the drink that Aunt Beru serves up, the blue milk. What did it taste like?
I have had the blue milk, and I can tell you that it is a little bit of an acquired taste.
Yeah.
It is thicker than I thought it was going to be, and it was icier than I thought it was going to be. It's a vegan-based drink, so it is coconut milk and rice milk and some kind of citrusy flavors. And there's actually a couple different kinds of flavors. There's a blue milk and there's a green milk. I just had the blue, and it was interesting. And, you know, I think at $8 a glass, I don't think it's going to be for everybody. But I can also see as we start to get into the summer months, it's a very refreshing kind of drink.
Yeah.
So that might help you out as it gets hot here.
How did you get in? Is it true you're the only radio reporter in the country that got to broadcast live from the park?
That is true.
How did that happen?
Nicely done.
I'm sitting here right now. I'm surrounded by, there's a bunch of TV people here, and I think some print as well, but I'm the only radio reporter because I work for ABC, and ABC is owned by Disney, so there are a lot of perks to my job, but this is definitely one of them. Personally, as somebody who grew up in Los Angeles and has been to Disneyland throughout my life as a kid and seen a lot of it, to be here right now when nobody is here, to be able to take a picture, a selfie with the Millennium Falcon, and there's nobody else around me, that's a pretty unique
experience.
That's
not bad. Jason, I mentioned this earlier, and I've only seen pictures of it. You're there. Nobody does it better than Disney at immersing you in a certain look or situation or time. Do you feel like you're in the movie when you're walking around there, when you see the structures? Does it feel like you're right in the middle of a Star Wars movie?
Yeah, that's one of the coolest things, because for most of us, we're never going to be on the set of Star Wars and be able to kind of see that and see the scope of it. Here, when you walk in, you feel like you are on the set. It feels like Disneyland still. I mean, it looks like Disneyland, but it looks like another planet as well. Everything you touch, I mean, it's metal, it's stone, it's got that real kind of tactile feel to it that is just so solid that you're so impressed, and that's cool. But when you see the Millennium Falcon, which, by the way, they've never built a full-size Millennium Falcon like this, not even for the movies.
Yeah.
They've used models, they've used sets, they've used parts of it, whatever they needed to shoot. This is the first time you're going to see a full-size Millennium Falcon. So for just the scale of it is just, it's so impressive. And then you turn around, and then there's a TIE fighter right behind you, which is, you know, one of the ships that the First Order flies.
Yeah.
And that's huge and impressive as well. And then there's stormtroopers walking by you. There's a Chewbacca over there. You feel like you're in another world.
This does sound really cool, at least to experience.
Yeah.
I'll spend maybe an hour there. The family will be there like 3 days. It opens officially tomorrow morning. It's Star Wars Galaxy Edge. This is in Disneyland, California. Now, this
Correct.
Will also be opening in Disney World in Orlando, what, in August?
August 29th, I believe, is the date that's going to open. And same thing, they're both identical. They spent $1 billion on both. Both are, I believe, 14 acres. They're going to have all the same things. That one ride is going to be open, the Millennium Falcon ride. Then there's another ride that's going to be opening at both of them later this year at some point. We don't know exactly when.
And what is that ride?
Yeah.
That ride is called Star Wars Rise of the Resistance. They're very secretive about it. I don't know much about it, what you'll be able to do, what'll happen. I don't believe it's a motion simulator like the Millennium Falcon ride. It's something where you're either on a track or it's trackless, but you move around.
And a smart move to stagger the opening so that people will come and experience the first ride and then wait 6 months and go back for the second ride. That's pretty smart, right?
It's ingenious. I mean, they really know what they're doing here, but they got to get that $1 billion back.
They're going to get it back in the first day. Isn't right. there like an R2-D2 life-size you can buy for like, what, $20,000?
Wow.
$25,000.
Oh, sorry.
Wow. It's the first commercially available R2-D2 that they've ever made, and you can, there's a remote, and it makes sounds and does all the cool stuff, and it's $25,000.
Jason, there's rumors of a Mamma Mia land. Are you hearing anything positive or negative? Is that going to happen?
Not.
That'd
no,
be great.
I have not heard that yet.
Right.
I don't believe that's a Disney property.
No.
So.
All right.
I don't think so.
Interesting.
We totally appreciate you talking to us. Have fun. How many times did you go on the Millennium Falcon?
Just the once. Just
really?
Did it the once. And like I said, I get a little motion sick, so that's probably that's good for me. Take a Dramamine. That really helps. And, you know, I have that experience in my mind forever now.
Do you think it's more exciting than the Swiss Family Robinson treehouse? Be honest.
Ooh, that's
close.
A good question. Close. No, that's one of my favorites.
Yeah?
So
all right.
I like the Jungle Cruise.
It's a little more exciting than that.
All yes. right. All right.
Thank you so much, you lucky dog, you. Jason,
all right, take care, guys.
Thank you
Thanks,
so much.
Jason.
Jason Nathanson, ABC News entertainment correspondent.
That's what we said.
Yes. You got through that beautifully.
Nice job.
Well done.
All right. Then we'll see how funny it is when we go to news early right now, Bertrand.
That's not allowed. That's not your professional.
Your Talk husband is the biggest Star Wars fan I've ever met. He's not. There's no dates in the book. We're going in August. We're going in
September. No, I think July is what we're looking at.
Right.
But I'm kind of shocked that he didn't jump on this and say, you know, okay, we'll be there opening day, take a week off.
Right.
It does matter that it's finals week for one of my kids.
Yeah.
So maybe that had something to do with it.
Earlier I mentioned that in Florida,
finals next year, too.
Yeah, there's always finals. Are they really finals if they have them again next year? I don't think so.
I don't think they are.
No. All right. So I mentioned that it was in Animal Kingdom in Florida. I'm wrong. It's at our Hollywood Studios, the Disney Movie Studios theme park. That's who's got their Star Wars land.
That's okay. That's an honest mistake, though.
Yeah, that's an honest mistake. Thank you, Steve.
That.
Thank you.
Get a room, you two.
Normally.
A bully room.
If there's a ride that's both at Disneyland and Disney World, more times than not, the one at Disney World is quite a bit bigger because they've got more space. But with this one, evidently, they've got the same amount of space to play with. So,
and he said identical because I thought there would be differences.
Me too.
And you being the Disney connoisseur, you love it there.
Yeah.
I go there.
Yeah.
The Pirates of the Caribbean, isn't that longer at Disneyland?
At Disneyland it is, yes.
I'm kind of surprised.
Yeah.
I thought World would take
almost care of- always. Almost every one of their rides is scaled larger in Florida just because they had so much acreage to work with. But at Disneyland, that one is bigger and longer at Disneyland.
It sounds pretty cool.
It does, doesn't it? And you've seen the pictures, right?
It does look awesome.
It looks fantastic. I'm so anxious to see it.
Well, maybe in July, but, you know, I'll be calling you from there going, I have been in line the whole week.
Right. You should actually leave now if you're going in July just to make sure you get on.
It's a good
Long
point.
Long lines.
All right, 10:30 news time. Here's Steve Bertrand. Go. Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And one of our favorite guests is back on the air with us, lifestyle expert and etiquette coach, Akila Easter. Hello, woman.
Hi, guys.
Nice to see you, Akila. Thanks for coming up.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely.
We were talking off the air. The first thing you said in your bubbly way, which is why we love having you here, you're like, have you ever had any bad family vacations?
Sit back.
And this is the time of the year when people want to have these grandiose ideas of, hey, guys, you want to go on a trip together?
Yes.
Yeah. And you're inviting. Traveling brings out different things in people, right?
Uh-huh. Go ahead and say the worst.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the worst. Okay, there we go.
It's stressful.
Yes, it is very stressful. And then you decide to add another family who you don't know their behavior behind closed doors.
Right.
So that's a whole new thing that people are starting. I'm like, you have to be mentally prepared. You have to get prepared. You have to discuss. You can't just say, let's meet at the airport at this date and this time. You have to have a game plan.
Right.
Yes.
So is there a test? Is there a question, a sample question or two that you should
I don't
throw
have
out?
That miracle question.
No?
I do our answer. But I think you should have the expectations established before you travel.
Yeah.
I know some people who may want to do every single thing together. You're like, no, we have these plans as well. So we're going to probably do this as a family.
Uh-huh.
So having those established so people don't get offended when you get there and like, oh, you guys made other plans.
Right.
Being aware of kids, because I think that's what does it when kids travel, right? And then you have another family with kids. They're going to be a little combative because you guys are going to be together for an extended period.
Yeah.
So that's a major thing. You have to talk to your kids of who's the authority figure, who you have to, you know, who you have to listen to, understanding that another family. So we have to be conscientious of what the activities that they want to do. It may not be everything you want to do.
Right.
So establishing that before you go.
Yeah.
Bill, have you traveled with another family?
When I was a kid, we did almost all the time. But as
now
an adult, I learned from that mistake that it's best to just travel with those you love.
Yes.
Right?
We've never done it. And I noticed you said it's kind of a newer trend. I know like for spring break, sometimes in the neighborhood, there were like four or five families that met up and stayed at the same place.
Yeah.
One of our vacations took the kids to Disney for the first time. My sister is really a Disney fan. So she like had this rigid schedule that you couldn't deviate from.
Yeah.
But she's trying to fit everything in a short amount of time.
Yeah.
My youngest Dylan was on the wrong ADHD meds and slept on the bench for 2 hours in the middle of Disney. And we also arrived and Dylan kept scratching his head and went to Mickey's medical kiosk and it turned out he had lice. So we had to get the stuff that they delivered to the hotel. I was horrified and the lady in Mickey's medical castle said, no, this happens all the time.
I'm sure. That's how they were so prepared.
So we call that vacation Disney on lice. It was not a good one.
And like you, I think when we said off air, when those different things happen, those are the memories that you have, right? Associated with it. So remember
we'll never forget it.
Right. Never. And your son will never be able to live that down
either. No, I know.
But yeah, this is the new trend. People like to rent, you know, large houses out. So you want to accommodate. If it's a 4-bedroom house, you're probably not just going to have one family there.
Right.
So you're trying to split the cost, travel on a budget. So there's a lot of new trends that are coming with that.
Mm-hmm. You know, you always hear that phrase, fun for the whole family, when you're vacationing places. Nothing's fun for the whole family.
No.
Is it?
No. Not the person who planned it, probably. And if they have a rigid schedule, they probably hate when you deviate from that, right?
So
we're 5 minutes over. We need to move on to the next thing, right? So the person who plans it oftentimes, they're not enjoying the fun. They're the task keeper. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
What if the families don't get along? Because a lot of times families will just say, hey, we're going with this family somewhere, but I don't like that kid. Well, too bad. I like the parents.
And I do not understand that.
Yeah.
You're going to force your kids to endure things because you guys want to go. That's when I would have a talk with both sides of the family and kind of say that what I said at the beginning, we need to have these rules. And I would schedule private things with my kid to make sure that they're not forced to be with that other child all the time.
Would you recommend vacation counseling?
Yes.
Or like a prenup, but a pre-vay or something.
Or even if you hire a sitter when you get to that location, maybe hire two separate sitters.
Oh.
I mean, that could be you guys are in this room, you guys are in the other room, or maybe you guys do this adventure and we do this adventure.
Yeah. That's a great idea.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how long should you know somebody, another family, before you even make the suggestion that vacationing together is a good idea?
You're never going to know them.
Really? Yeah.
You could know somebody for 20 years and then you spend a week with them and it's a whole new person, right? You start to see all of their little habits that you never knew.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think you can ever know anybody.
Right.
I mean, I've traveled with cousins, families. We grew up together and we still got in each other's nerves. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm. The disappointment that comes about on a vacation, would you attribute it to similar to like Christmas where you have expectations all year? It's going to be the best day ever. And then when it happens, there's all kinds of weird things that you can't control, right?
So that probably goes back back to one of the rules we should establish. Don't have high expectations,
keep
right?
Keep your expectations
low. Yeah, keep
low.
Them realistic so yeah. that you are not disappointed. And that's what my mom used to always tell me, because I would always have high expectations. She's like, you set yourself up for disappointment when you do that.
Right.
Just have that kind of if it's a spouse, you have that talk with your spouse and be like, if I start to lose control, just tell me to relax. Bring me back down.
Right.
So it's all planning ahead for the different bumps that you'll run into.
Yeah.
Or let me go get a massage while you handle the kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. That'll calm down.
Yeah, that's a great one.
Yeah. All right. So we talk about families traveling together, which is in the last few years a pretty big trend. So summer vacation is coming.
Right.
But what about just like a summer play date? Are there proper ways of arranging play dates?
A lot of times, is what I've learned as a new parent.
Yes.
Is that you have to be nice to other parents so your kids can get invited. So
of course.
Things.
Oh, yeah.
So you just found that out now?
I'm like, oh, so I have to talk to people.
Yes,
now.
You do.
Oh, because she has to get invited to the birthday parties,
yes.
right? So forging new relationships as an adult is a difficult thing. So just try to find the people that you have at least one thing in common with, right? And you have to, again, establish rules. What is the discipline going to be like if my child goes to your house? Those
uh-huh.
different types of things. So you're not getting frustrated if a parent says something to your child that you don't normally say. Who is going to be there with the child? Having those established. Or maybe it could do, if you want to do a double date where you're having the parents actually getting to know each other versus just dropping off at the house,
uh-huh.
You guys can have a little wine, have a little cheese plate, you know, have something set up to where people aren't just showing up and you're like, oh, so what do you want to do,
mm-hmm.
right? So having things planned out, even activities for the kids, I would have board games set up for probably every 20 minutes the kids are transitioning to something. I have a 4-year-old, so you know their attention spans.
Yeah, sure. Non-existent.
There isn't one. Yeah, I'm like, what am I saying? So,
put a little wine and cheese will fix that.
No. Don't get me in trouble. Please do not call the authorities on me.
But that's true. They will play something and then go, okay, what's next?
What's
sometimes
next?
Before they even finish the game.
Yeah. And when they're going to another person's house, they have high expectations, right?
Yeah.
So the kids are like, okay, we're about to go over John's house. I can't wait. And then they're like, oh, we're just going to watch TV. No, you should have activities set up. And even close out as they start to wind down a little, maybe close out with a good movie.
Right.
And then they have something to close out while you guys are winding down. And then you can say, and make sure you're letting them know, we're going to leave in 30 minutes. We're going to leave in 20 minutes. I have to constantly coach my daughter because she's surprised sometimes.
Yeah.
And I establish you're not spending the night. You know, I tell her all these different rules before we get there.
But if let's say the other parent hears you constantly saying, you got 25 minutes, you got 20 minutes, you got 15. Do they take that personally, saying, oh, there's a shot clock. What
right.
happened?
You're ready to go? No, you set the date. So I would say, you know, a good play date would be from 1 to 3 on Saturday.
Yeah.
So you know that there's a duration.
There's a cutoff.
Kids don't understand that. But with the adult, I would say, you know, we're going to have a play date from this time to this time.
Yeah.
I always make sure I have something, or I say I have something planned afterwards.
Oh, smart.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Dietary restrictions is kind of a problem. One of my kids had a friend over for a play date, and he told me he was a vegetarian. So I went and got veggie burgers.
Right.
And I called the kid's dad and said, is this cool? And he's like, well, we don't usually use that brand because they're cruel to it. There's some reason that they weren't into
you're picky.
It.
Okay.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, well, I wasn't planning on going back to this. He's like, no, that's okay. And then I'm thinking, why did you tell me that?
He probably was just a passive thought that he said, but yeah, that's a good one. Dietary restrictions, like my daughter, she's not allergic to peanut butter, but she hates peanut butter.
Oh.
And that's a common food for kids that age, right?
Yeah.
So just letting them know, don't give them a very distinct list. You're like, just give her the very general things.
My kids only eat lobster,
right.
So have lobster ready, please.
Can you please have the water boiling so when we get there? But
I should use that with my friends.
Yeah.
I only eat lobster.
That's all I eat. I'm a lobsterarian.
I like melted butter.
What are you?
Lobsterarian.
I like it.
Yeah. Do you have to make, like when I was a kid, play dates didn't exist. You
right,
just showed up somewhere and you played with a kid
you
and then when
outside.
You were done, you went home.
Yeah.
But not at 4, did you?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I don't remember ever hearing play date until I was an adult.
Yeah.
You
I
know?
Guess that's true.
So is that still allowable? Can your kid just show up at another kid's house, or is that illegal now?
I don't think that's the etiquette that goes on now. I think
no.
the times have changed. Kids don't go outside. I remember going outside at probably 9 in the morning and not coming home till
right.
5. We went down to the creek. We
right.
did all these exploring. And our parents were like, All right, you're fine. You know, those are, that's
and we
not,
couldn't call and check in because there was no cell phone.
We did. We came home probably to use the bathroom, yep. get a drink of water,
maybe
and then we were right
lunch.
Back outside. Yeah.
Right.
So, no, I think times have changed, and there's a lot more helicopter parents as well.
Yeah.
To where they don't give their kids that freedom, and then they're stuck when they're
so
older.
So a time and place must be established in writing. It has to be initialed by all parties.
I'll bring my lawyer as well, just right. in case.
You know, Mr. Cohen, he'll be initialing this
yes.
for you.
Yes.
There has to be an age, though, and I don't know if it's first grade or second grade where, you know, a kid can just go, I'm going to stop by Billy's house and ring the doorbell and see if he can play.
Yeah. Well, we're in an urban setting, so I think it's different, like in yeah. an apartment building. That's mm. a much safer place. You can be like, I'm going to go to the third floor. Okay. Now, then parents are like, text me when you get there. Tell me when you
right.
know, all these different things. They still don't have that freedom because they're still connected.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That's etiquette expert Akilah Easter. She's here. If you have any questions or comments, we're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and one of our favorite guests, Akilah Easter, is here. She's a lifestyle expert and etiquette coach. You can find her at her website. What is it?
Akilah CT. It's my middle name. AKILAHSITI.com.
All right. Something, Bill, that we should pay attention to, because we are going to talk about, with the weather heating up, there is proper office attire.
Oh.
And I think we may be guilty of some things.
Uh-oh. No. It depends on what industry you work in, right? So
Wendy and I are in meatpacking. So are we dressed appropriately or not?
So you guys should not be wearing the spaghetti straps, which I'm about
Bill.
To talk about.
Too late.
Right? So you should take that off.
You should have called
nice
me.
Camisole.
Right? Thank you.
Exactly. But Wendy, that is true. Like, a lot of women believe that a camisole is fine for the office, and those spaghetti straps are going to be, they're not appropriate if you're in that corporate setting.
Put a jacket over
yeah,
it or
put
something.
Oftentimes we're in air conditioned, so you already have a sweater that's stuck in your office because you know how cold it's going to be. But just because it seems because the hours may get relaxed in the summertime, a lot of people tend to get more relaxed with their attire.
Uh-huh.
You need to make sure you know the dress code. You're not going to show up in shorts if you know that this is a corporate setting. You're not going to maybe make sure your undergarments are not showing. Not maybe. Make sure your undergarments aren't showing. You may.
Bill, your thong is showing. You have a whale tail.
See, I didn't know if I could say it. So when you
my
bend
under-roos.
Over, those
can you guys see my underoos?
It's weird you have
Speaking
Wonder Woman thongs.
Why
right?
is that weird? I love Wonder Woman. It's not weird.
Like, what are you talking about?
Come on.
I have something that I bet I'm super guilty of.
What?
Are flip-flops acceptable at work?
No. And
oh,
Wendy,
those people who flip-flop down the hallway, and I can hear you coming.
I know. Yeah. That's why they're called flip-flops.
Right. Wendy has high heel flip-flops. Is
no,
that
those
weird?
Are different.
They
those
make.
Right?
I, you say
different?
It as a joke.
Do they make those?
Like a
they
really
do.
Big wedge, yeah.
Wow.
Look, I was like, what are you talking about?
Wow,
those
I didn't
too.
Know that.
You want to probably just consider, that's all the way down to the toes, the footwear as well.
Yeah.
Be aware. In a corporate setting, you're probably not going to wear a lot of open-toed shoes, those different types of things. So you want to make sure you do a double check before you walk into the office, especially if you're trying to establish a relationship where you're looking for a promotion. Although we hate it, people do judge us on our outer appearances. That's what social media is about. That's why we post all these pictures.
Yeah.
And in a corporate setting, a lot of the higher-ups are looking at who can represent the company well.
Yeah.
Don't mm-hmm. you feel guilty when we come to work every day when the whole sales staff and all the upper echelons are in suits and
nope.
look at us?
I don't. I should.
Like, you really don't, because no. I kind of do.
No, you shouldn't feel guilty. It depends on what industry you're
I guess,
in.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, I could see how women could dress, as you said, in a more flimsy manner, but mm-hmm. how would a guy be dressing in a more flimsy manner?
Tank tops.
Yeah.
Yeah. And men, it's kind of hard for men to try to figure out if they're wearing a dress shirt with an undershirt under it, like if
yeah.
it's a see-through dress shirt, and like a white one or a pink one, those different types of things that you get lighter in the summertime.
Yeah.
You have to wear an undershirt?
If you're just, your nipples are showing through, yeah, you probably should put an undershirt. You want to do, guys need to do a check in the mirror before they walk out as well.
Nipple check.
Right.
Nipple check. Ooh. Ah.
I'm about to coin that term.
It's a hockey
all.
Penalty.
And you don't want to unbutton. I see guys get a little bit more relaxed with unbuttoning their tops. You don't want to go all the way down. We're not looking for gigolos at the office. Is that an appropriate word?
Yeah, well, this is not
yeah.
Saturday Night Fever.
Yeah,
I have never seen a guy with
showing,
it
yeah.
down.
Yeah, yeah, two buttons would be the max. And I would just say the top button for a more relaxed appearance.
Oh, all right.
And guys, can like we mentioned before, with shorts, you're probably not going to wear shorts in a corporate setting.
Bill,
but again,
yep.
what are you wearing today?
Just shorts. No shirt.
No service.
Right. And a sombrero. Is that weird? Is
and
that weird?
His Wonder Woman.
Yeah. Is it okay for somebody in the office to mention to somebody else? Like, whose job is it to say, hey, what you're wearing, kind of inappropriate for the office. Whose job is that? The boss only or somebody else?
Yeah, this tends to escalate. And HR would have to come in and do a memo. Most HR should do a memo when summertime begins and be like, look, we know it's warmer outside. Right. But then just remind people of what the handbook says or what's you're responsible for as an employee.
Ah, okay. Mm-hmm. All right.
Something that's very important to talk about because summer vacation is upon us. And social media, you see a lot of people posting their vacation photos. Oh, here's our family here.
Yeah.
I've fallen victim to it. I do it.
You have
but
to
we
wait.
Shouldn't do it.
Wait till you get back because then everybody knows you're out of the country.
And your
they
house
know
is
where
easier
you
to
are.
Rob.
Yes.
Yeah, but there are alarm systems, people. So, you know.
Yeah, but you won't be back to respond to that alarm, right? So if you're posting that you're 3,000 miles away, that gives, and you're letting everybody know every second, we're heading to the airport now. We're heading to this. I think it was a couple months ago where a rideshare driver, he dropped somebody off at the airport, then went back and robbed their house.
Oh,
like
wow.
Those different types of things. So you just want to be aware. Social media, everybody thinks that those are their friends following them, but a lot of us have 2,000, 3,000 people. You don't know all those people.
Right.
Yeah. You have just made me aware of something because I have a tendency to talk to anyone who will listen. Mm-hmm. So every time we're going to the airport, I will tell the driver.
Where are you going? How long
oh
have you gone
God,
for?
Oh my God, I'm looking so
for 4 days.
Where the key is hidden. I can't believe I left the key in the rock right next to the door. That was crazy.
I'm no longer talking to them.
Yeah.
You can talk to them. Just don't tell them where you're going and how
or
long.
For how long.
Right. It's obvious you're going somewhere if you're going to the airport, but
just tell them you're going to Woodfield Mall.
They know your address.
I'm going to the shopping mall in Rosemont.
I'll be home in
duty
10 minutes.
Free. Yeah,
I have suitcases because I'm buying a lot.
Right.
And then we're going to Fogo de Chão.
Right. Nobody
knows put some
how
meat
to
in there.
So the less you say, the better. And then on social media, like vacation pictures, you want to wait a week or 2 weeks
before
you
get back. Yeah,
wait till you get back.
Yeah.
Wait a week or two.
On your flight back, even, you can probably do that, right?
Yeah.
You can say, oh, we just came back from such and such. Yeah, and let people know.
Right.
You can share the pictures, but I would just wait to let people know every single thing that I'm doing.
You can follow social media now and figure out where everyone is and when
no
one's home.
How do people stalk their exes now on social media? I'm not saying from experience.
That's
but I'm
for
just
another
saying.
Day.
I'm
wow. She is lifestyle expert and etiquette coach and stalker expert, which we will talk to at a later time. Akilah Easter, it is always a joy to have you
up
here.
Thanks, guys. Thanks
you're
so much.
Certainly very helpful to us. Again, if people want to follow you, you're on Instagram and Twitter, and it's your first name, Akilah, and your middle name?
CT. Akilah CT.
The letters CT?
No.
Oh, sorry. SITI. AKILAHSITI. Just Google me, Akilah Easter. Yep.
That's the best way to do it. Akilah, thanks so much.
Thanks, guys, for having me.
Wonder Woman!
Quit it. All right.
Will you please stand? The Wonder Woman stand.
Being abused. All right, we'll take a quick break and then there's more show. Wendy, when the music stops, you have to grab a chair. Come on.
Musical chairs.
You
that's
know how the game
playing.
Is played. Boy, Wikipedia is razor fast. Leon Redbone, we just found out that the great Leon Redbone has passed away at the age of 69. Wikipedia already has his obituary printed with, you know, all the pertinent information. He was a Cypriot American singer-songwriter.
Yes.
Meaning, of course, that he hails from Cyprus. I've never heard anyone described that way. Cypriot.
A Cypriot?
Yeah. Have you?
No. Well, if you're from Cyprus,
then
I guess,
you would, yeah. He is a singer-songwriter, guitarist, actor, and voice specializing in jazz, blues, and Tin Pan Alley classics. I have to add to that, he was a fashion plate.
He was a fashion
Wasn't
plate.
Wasn't he?
And I didn't realize until you said it how I was introduced to him, but I'm sure it was Saturday Night Live.
Yes.
That's the first time I ever saw him.
Yes.
And I don't remember he sang, I think, the All commercial and Mr. Belvedere theme, but I remember him from the Budweiser commercial.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he appeared in that, I think.
We also have confirmation I mentioned a little while ago that some kids may know him from the movie Elf. There is a part of Elf that's similar to all the Rankin-Bass specials. In the Rankin-Bass specials, they always had a snowman that was played by Burl Ives. So he's like the updated version of Burl Ives. He's Leon the snowman.
And
the
he had
Elf.
The hat and the glasses, right? Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, he's very entertaining.
He was just one of those guys who was always I mean, if you were in on, it was like you were in on the joke.
Right.
If you knew Leon Redbone.
Very much so. Oh, I loved his work. Very, very sad news. Leon Redbone passing away at the age of 69.
Although, what did you tell me off the air?
What?
You thought he was older than 69, because I sure did too.
He's saying like he was older than 69 40 years ago.
That Tin Pan Alley sound made you believe.
But even the look of him.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought he was older than 69, absolutely.
Yeah, he went out of his way to look older. You know, but I was every once in a while out of nowhere. He's in that. I've got this list of people in my head that I always say to myself, where's Dabney Coleman? Where's Gene Hackman? You know, I've got those people that just constantly are in there. And every now and then I go, I haven't heard anything about Leon Redbone forever. I don't know what happened to him.
And well, then they die.
And then they die.
But, you know, Wendy, that's such a great point. So let's say we were watching him, what, 40 years ago on Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
He would have been 29
right.
years old. That's hard to imagine. Yeah.
Who sings this song, Bill?
I do.
Let them sing it.
Thank you, Bill.
No, I said I do.
I
doesn't
know.
Work if I say I do.
Yeah, I can't imagine for the life of me. He was 29 years old when we saw him.
I'm guessing 40, but if it was
still
35
though.
Years old, yeah.
Yeah, he looked at least 10 or 15 or 20 years older than that back then.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, that's a shame.
Oh, very sad. All right, you and I have discussed this a little bit off the air, so let's bring it on the air. Last night, a really hard thing to watch as the Cubs were playing, one of their players, Albert Almora, hit a foul ball down the line, the third base side, and struck a young girl, and it affected him like crazy. I don't think I've ever seen in all the times I've watched baseball, I've seen players upset over something like this, but not to the extent that Albert Almora was last night. Did you see any of this?
He broke down.
Oh, it was sad.
More than once.
I was not watching the game, but I was tooling around on Facebook, and Nick DiGilio posted something like, you know, I feel so sorry for Albert Almora Jr., and then somebody put, what happened? So I just Googled it, and right away they had the video up where he just holds his head in his hand, like, oh, my God. It was just heartbreaking.
Ryan Burroughs just sent me a statement from Major League Baseball saying, the events at last night's game were extremely upsetting. We send our best wishes to the child and family involved. Clubs have significantly expanded netting and their inventory of protected seats in recent years. With last night's event in mind, we will continue our efforts on this important issue.
Without question, in the last couple of years, because you've had a few of these incidents, and people always go, but it's a few incidents. It's not like it's happening every day, but even one or two is too many. So Major League Baseball, honestly, has acted quickly to put up more netting down the left and the right.
And where does it go now?
I'd
like
say
to
roughly,
third base?
Yeah, a little beyond third base. It's not enough, you know, obviously.
It was such an unusual angle. And then, Bill, we were talking about how he could see her so clearly.
Right, immediately.
Which was so shocking to
me. That shocked me, too, because as I was watching it on TV, you know, the camera zoomed in there, and I couldn't even see who was hit. He saw it right away.
He reacted.
Oh.
He took the swing and then watched the ball move and then reacted within seconds. He was so upset. And then the more gripping part of it was, all right, so all this happened within seconds, right? The next half inning, he went over to the side where this girl was sitting with her family, and he talked to one of the security people. It was a woman, and she explained to him whatever she explained. You couldn't tell from watching it, and he just started to cry, and she was holding him.
Yep.
It was a very strange moment. I'm thrilled that he showed that much emotion. My heart goes out to this little girl and hopes so badly she's okay. The hospital had issued a statement earlier saying that things were getting better, but we don't know exactly what that means at this point.
I just hope she's okay.
Oh,
I mean, you know, poor sweet little thing crying. It's just heartbreaking to me.
You can't react.
It's
a ball that's hit they estimated that it was at 90 miles per hour upon the swing. So it slows down a little bit as it travels, but not significantly. So there's really very little reaction time you can have.
And listening to Steve Cochran talk about it with Dave Enn at the Birthday Boy this morning, Steve's right. These baseball players hit it harder, they're bigger, they're more powerful than ever before.
Right.
That net needs to extend down the whole outfield.
Here's the strange part of that. People have talked about the cost of it. The cost of it doesn't matter. It's not expensive to extend netting all the way down. What happens is you get people, and I saw this last week. I went to the first baseball game for me this season, And it's the first time we've sat behind netting. My daughter and I were sitting behind netting. And you see people as they sit down, like, oh, great. I'm not going to be able to see anything. You forget it's there a half an inning in. It just
even quicker than
it's
that.
It's invisible to you, a half an inning or less.
And
yeah.
If it gives you protection, I mean, imagine if there wasn't glass at Blackhawk games. And the
right.
glass, you know, is different. This is netting. The scout seats at Guaranteed Rate, same thing. You see the netting and you're like, bummer, but you're right behind home plate.
Right.
You're going to get more foul tips there.
Yeah.
But you really don't see it at all.
You don't. You forget it's there so quickly.
So do you think that...
I think they'll do something about it quickly. I really do.
Because they did pretty quickly get the up to the third baseline, right?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, this poor sweet thing. And I felt so sorry for him. Absolutely 100% not his fault.
Right, right. I heard Steve's discussion about it earlier. One of the angles that people have talked about, and it's true, is that people's focus is different than it used to be. A lot of people are more distracted with cell phones and things. With this little girl, she was just a little girl who was in the worst place at the worst time. You know, you can't even speculate as to whether or not she was paying attention. It wouldn't have mattered.
Yeah, but even if she was and saw it coming, there wasn't enough time to react.
There's nothing you could do. Right. Right.
I just feel so bad. And like there was silence that came over.
Oh, yeah. If you watch the broadcast, you see other people's reactions. They didn't really want to they didn't want to show exactly what was going on there. So they were showing other people and you could see other people reacting to this. How could you not? You know, a little girl like that getting hit. Just horrible.
And I hope we find out soon that she's okay.
Yeah.
I know there were reports that she was crying, obviously,
yeah.
Which means she was conscious.
Yeah.
But, you know, they said, and this is weird, as I was looking this morning to see the update, and it's like the person who ended up with the ball said there was no blood on the ball. I didn't even want to think of that,
right.
But I guess that
right.
could happen.
Yeah. Yep.
Poor sweet thing.
All right. We're all hoping for the best, obviously. We'll take a quick break, come back. If you want to join us, 312-981-7200. We'd love to hear from you. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. We're at 312-981-7200. You can call us or text us. Kevin texted us at that number. And he said, Wendy and Bill, if you loved Leon Redbone, you need to check out Pokey Lafarge. Who I believe was on Star Trek Next Generation, wasn't he?
Oh, yeah, with the
one of my
banana
favorite.
Clip for glasses.
For glasses, yep. Pokey Lafarge, he says, is from Illinois, and he will remind you of Leon Redbone. I'm not familiar with the work of Pokey Lafarge.
Porky.
Or Porky, his brother, who loved donuts. Porky Lafarge. Do you know him?
No.
No? Jasmine, can you play a little bit of Pokey for us? You're not buying it. It's a much more countrified version.
But it's, I mean, Leon Redbone down here like this.
Could you please always talk like that?
Yes.
That would be such a joy if you would always talk like that and never explain it. Just always talk that way.
This is very pleasant and I enjoy this.
Yeah?
Completely different.
It has a dated sound, but
yeah,
it's not from the era of Leon Redbone. I can't think. Can you think of anybody that has that sound? I mean, back then, decades and decades ago, everybody had that sound. But I don't think anyone's pulling that sound off now, are they? I don't think so.
Yeah, I'm even desperately Googling Leon Redbone sound alike.
What would... is it Tin Pan Alley? Is that the time era that he was shooting for? Like a Tin Pan Alley type sound? I don't even know how to classify it. He was in a league all by himself, really.
Yeah, I can't think of anyone who has that same thing.
But isn't it crazy that he reached the pinnacle of success? So this would have been in the late 70s, early 80s, right? When he took off? Does that sound about right?
Yeah.
So... who was the audience then that was wanting music? Like, it was so new to me. I knew that it was dated, old sounding, but how did that happen? It's such a weird, quirky thing that people bought into it.
I didn't realize, because I don't know how old I was, but I didn't realize it was a throwback to an earlier sound.
Oh,
I
you
just,
didn't?
No, I just kind of thought, boy, this guy is doing something different than everyone else.
Yeah.
Tin Pan Alley, I thought that was a bowling alley.
Would you put Would you put Manhattan Transfer in a similar...
Da-da-da-doo-da-da-doo-da-no-way.
No?
The Manhattan Transfer...
Yeah, because they also, they kind of came about and were playing a very retro style music. You don't think so?
It's like jazzy New Orleans. That's really all it is.
For Leanne Redbone or for Manhattan Transfer?
For Leanne Redbone. Dr. John might be the closest.
Oh, yeah, I could see that.
That might be the only other thing I can think of that's even close.
A couple of texters are saying, what about Leonard Cohen?
He falls into the Burt Bacharach kind of thing. I love Leonard Cohen.
I don't know how to put this into words.
I know what you're saying, and you can't say it.
He also had a retro sound, but not like Leon Redbone. Somebody else suggests Wet Willie. I don't know who Wet Willie is.
Here's a little Dr. John. This comes as close as I can think of.
But this is more orchestrated than Leon Redbone.
Well, he did it sometimes without an orchestra. I just want to get to the vocals. This is a funky orchestral version of... I'm in the right place.
Been wrong. Yeah, I can hear it. Yeah. Been right
there. That's as close as I can come.
Somebody says Tom Waits.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah? Yeah, I would give Tom Waits. Joe Cocker is suggested as somebody who might fit that mold a little bit.
Pretty close. Yeah. Closer than Parky LaFerge. Fogo de Chão.
Fogo de Chão. Yeah, definitely. Somebody said, Winchester Cathedral. I hate to admit it, but yes.
Well, now, okay.
That's just one song. That wasn't a whole...
Cue up that stupid song. Winchester Cathedral.
You're bringing me down.
I am. That's the next line.
That's the lyric, but you also are.
See, I don't understand what you're asking, because if you're going like capturing the sound of an earlier era, Manhattan Transfer. But if you're going with the unique individualist sound of Leon Redbone,
no one is really coming
Dr.
close.
Dr. John is the only
thing. Is the closest.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And maybe Tom Waits.
This is a good guess, though, Wendy. Squirrel Nut Zippers. You say no to them? This is Winchester Cathedral. Pull over to the side of the road. I urge you.
This is Herb Alpert-y to me.
Every time I hear this, I want to press an elevator door button. I just want to hit 6. I feel like I'm in an elevator in the 60s.
I feel like shopping. I feel like shopping in high heels.
Yeah, with some Aquanet.
Yes.
Spray your hair with Aquanet.
And
no
look, wearing turquoise for some reason. Looking around, just going, do I need tea today? Oh, baking soda.
Sunglasses that look like Jackie Kennedy Onassis may have worn them at some point.
That's what this makes me feel like.
Yep.
I guess I'm hearing it a little bit, Leon Redbone.
A texter says, Bill, how dare you put Winchester Cathedral back in my head? No, and it's spelled with 11 O's.
I guess. This is a...
But this has a Leon Redbone-y sound.
Yeah, I guess.
You have to admit.
All right, I'll give you this.
Yeah, well, I don't want it.
You bring this song up all the time.
This was on a mixtape that I made once, and it's when the U.S. government sent me a letter saying, never, ever make another mixtape. They forbid me from making more mixtapes after I included this song.
But it's the earworm that you like to give everyone about once a month. You really do.
I know.
Because you feel like you'll forget about it then, but you can't.
No, it hasn't worked that way. I keep thinking that's how it'll play out, but it has not worked that way. She wouldn't have gone far away. How is nobody remaking this song? Hey, Jonas Brothers, get on this. What are you thinking?
God, this is just really a piece of work.
Let it play out. It's got 11 more minutes.
All right. You stood and you watched us. It's the old megaphone.
I know. There was a time when I put this on my mixtape that I thought people in the car would hear this and be happy.
Who would be happy?
President Roosevelt? I don't know. I have no idea whose day would be brightened by this.
A bodeodo?
Vododeodo.
Well, pardon me. God.
Yeah, I know.
You've hurt everyone
today.
I
know. I don't mean to.
On this Friday Eve.
I know. All right, we'll take a quick break, and then we'll get you some news.
There is no break.
Oh, the sponsors pulled out because we played Winchester Cathedral?
Yes. And Tom Waits had the same kind of stuff. I guess that really... I hate to give it to you, but Circle gets the square on
which
that.
One?
On the stupid Winchester Cathedral.
Yeah, but this was them just doing one song. Like, I don't know what else this band ever did other than Winchester Cathedral, but I'm guessing it wasn't all like that. I'm guessing. Like, Leon Redbone, once he committed, he stayed in that era. He didn't change lanes at all.
What about Tiny Tim, then?
Oh, Tiny Tim.
But it's
yes, you're right.
If you're
Tiny
going
Tim for sure.
Current artist going for a throwback sound, then Tiny Tim, Squirrel Nut Zippers, all those things. But if you're going for who has that
Aubon Pan, is that what you said? That's not a musical era, is it?
No, but it sure sounded like I was saying
Aubon Pan, you said. I know that's not music, Wendy. It's a place where you can go and get a crepe. You're confusing those two again.
I don't know. I just know whatever floats your boat.
414 says you must check out, and I referenced this earlier, but I didn't know the exact song.
Marky LaForge?
No. Leon Redbone singing a duet with Zoe Deschanel. That's during the end of the movie Elf. They do a rendition of Baby, It's Cold Outside, the politically incorrect Christmas carol Baby, It's Cold Outside, and it's really good.
I love Zoe Deschanel's voice.
Yeah.
I love that whole Elf movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, well, we have to get to news.
All right.
But we will try and find that just to give you a little snippet.
Okay.
And then more Winchester Cathedral coming up all the time.
Yeah, we promise.
Every hour on the hour.
Yeah.
News time right now, sponsored by Fisher Nuts, oven roasted, never fried. Here's Eric Rung.
He knows which movies make you laugh and which ones make you cry. If you love films, then he's your guy. So grab yourself some popcorn. He will not talk about hard boys. Dean.
I love Dean.
He's Dean.
I love Wendy.
Ah.
And I love Bill.
Ah.
I love everyone.
That's so nice of you.
I'm full of love.
You're lovable.
I love you, man.
Yeah.
Love.
Dean, we just got word half an hour ago that Leon Redbone had passed away.
Right.
And we were trying to think if there were any other performers that you could put in the same category as him. Does anyone come to mind?
Nope, not a one.
Very tough, right?
Not a one. He was one in a million.
A listener has suggested Leon Russell, and that might be...
It's a circus game with you and me.
Maybe a little bit. But a lot of Leon Russell's music was, jazzy and like kind of jazzy rock.
What about Quiet Riot? Do you think that's similar?
How about the Ides of March?
Ides of March are similar?
Leon Redbone really kind of specialized in songs of the 20s and 30s. Very vaudevillian in style. Very Tin Pan Alley.
Oh, Bill wins. He mentioned Tin Pan Alley. That was the magic void.
Hey, yeah. What do I win?
A cigar.
Oh. And he kind of broke through in the 1970s. When, it was, big glam rock and disco and the music was becoming bigger and more orchestrated. Along comes this, little odd man with a guitar sitting in a chair and a funny mustache singing Shine on Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
And it caught the attention. He was on Johnny Carson quite a bit. He became very, very popular. He had his own Budweiser commercial.
Right.
In the 1980s. And did a few voices in movies. He was one of the voices of one of the elves in Elf, the movie.
The snowman in Elf.
I think it was the snowman.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's what it was.
With the glasses and the hat and the, yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
But I was a big fan. I had a couple of albums back in the day. I used to, I used to enjoy listening to his music, thinking I had discovered something, that was so cool and avant-garde, when really he was really just playing the songs that my mom and dad grew up with when they were kids.
Dean, we did the math on this. He just passed away. He was 69 years old, which meant that when we were seeing him in those early performances, he was in his 30s.
About that.
He looked 69 then on SNL when I saw him.
Yeah.
In the official statement that announced his death today, they did not announce a cause of death. He did retire in 2015 and at that time cited health concerns. But in the official release, it said that he died holding his guitar with his hat on, waiting to meet Fats and, you know, like some of the great names in the blues. And they cited his age at the time of death was 127 years old, which was very Leon Redbone.
Yeah.
To do something like that, they said that he passed away at age 127.
I mentioned, and I got scolded for mentioning it, but I did anyway, that the song Winchester Cathedral had that same throwback feel as Redbone. And a texter said, I just pulled up my new vaudeville band. Every song they performed has that Winchester Cathedral sound. I've never heard any of their other songs, but they did the same thing he did. They committed to that era, and they just didn't stray from it.
Can I just say how impressed I am that one of our listeners has a new vaudeville band album that they can pull out?
Yes. Well, wow.
That's impressive.
Every time I mention that song, people go, why did you mention it? Now I won't be able to stop thinking about it. But this time we got...
Cathedral.
Da, da, da,
we already played it. Please stop.
But so many people have texted in saying, oh, I love that song. Play that more often.
It was very different when Jimi Hendrix was all along the Watchtower. And along comes, Ovodio.
Right. Da, 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 da.
Someone has suggested the Remember This Song, Putting on the Ritz.
Taco?
You scare me.
No, I'm hungry. Do you want a taco?
Super duper. It's the same kind of thing. Disco meets 20s throwback meets the muted voice.
That's pretty disco-y.
Yeah, he was incorporating
Mr. Taco?
Yeah, I hope you're going to play Ethel Merman's Disco Lucy or whatever disco song she had.
Right, that would be great. Dean, you were just in England.
I was.
What was going on in England? What brought you there?
I was there for the UK premiere of the Elton John movie Rocket Man.
Oh,
it looks so good.
I'm going to tell you about it in a minute. There are two movies that are opening this week. One of them really is awful, and one of them is really great. And I'll leave you with that cliffhanger.
Don't say which yet. Don't say which.
No, I'm not going.
I have a question.
I know my cliffhangers.
Last year, you're the king of the cliffhanger.
What?
Last year, we saw Freddie Mercury's story with Bohemian Rhapsody. So now it's Elton John. And did you just see the story that came out today that they're looking to do the same with Boy George?
I did see that.
What do you think of that?
I'm not sure that I am that interested in that story. Mm.
Mm. Do you really want to hurt me by saying that?
No, but I'll tumble for you.
I bet you will. Not intentionally, though.
But at some point, well, oh no.
I got a bad back.
Oh no.
These days it's involuntary.
Well, what did he do for us? I mean,
Boy George?
You know, Elton John.
I think just maybe because of the era, he was coming up at the same time as MTV, so that.
Yeah, he was the picture boy.
Right? And I, oddly enough, on this red carpet that I was on for the Rocket Man movie, among the British stars that were there was Boy George, and I talked with him on the red carpet, you know, and he's obviously said that he was, you know, has always been a big Elton John fan, you know, and I said, really, if it wasn't for Elton John, would there be a Boy George? He sort of followed the same pattern of an outrageous look and, you know, a great flamboyancy.
Yeah.
And he said that's probably true, that guys like him and David Bowie and, you know, many others that defied a conventional look and sound made it easier for guys like him that came along in the 1980s to do and look and sound the way that they
right.
did. But is there enough there, really, you know, for a Boy George biopic? I mean, that's...
Be stretching it.
I think it's stretching it. I mean, do they have three or four songs?
Oh yeah,
tops. Like what?
Do you really want
Karma
to hurt
Chameleon?
Me?
Yeah. Do you really want Tumble for
I'll
You?
I'll Tumble for You. That's three. And then what do you do for the rest of the hour and 40 minutes? You keep playing them over
time,
and over.
Makeup and Wardrobe.
Time is the name of the song.
I'm gonna give you. Time.
Yeah.
Right. All right. So there's four.
Hour and 35 minutes.
Right. Now we're coming in close. So you do a car chase scene or two. Right? That would be cool.
Well, he had a little situation. Didn't he have some kind of arrested park bench? What am I remembering? There was some scandal in his life.
Oh.
Unless I'm confusing him with someone else.
Oh.
Are you confusing him with George Michael?
Maybe. Yeah, but I think Boy George had something, too.
Tryst?
with Artie Johnson and Ruth Buzzy?
Pretty interesting.
I don't think that was him, Wendy.
Yeah, I'll tumble for out. You. My wall
nettle. You're a dirty old man.
Yeah, but now as the audience, do you start to say, well, I can't, like once a year, I don't want to see the same story over and over, or are the stories different enough, do you think?
I think that we can't go too crazy with biopics.
Right.
Also, by the way, if they're going to do biopics, I would rather see a Prince biopic before
yes.
I would rather see a Boy George biopic. If I thought about it for a minute, I'm sure I could think of 10 other artists that
are probably more
deserving, but... I mean, it's at some point, it's going to oversaturate.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
People already this week, since I've been talking a little bit about the Elton John movie, all they want to know is how it compares to Bohemian Rhapsody. And they're two completely different movies, interestingly, made in part by the same director. But these two movies are told in a completely different way, but they beg comparison that way. If we start flooding the market with biopics, people are just going to get sick and tired of it.
Although the Doors movie was that Oliver Stone's.
Yeah.
I loved that movie.
It's really good.
And that was a while ago. I like taking a musician or a band to focus on,
yeah.
But it has to be an interesting one. And speaking of that, Boy George was sentenced to 15 months in jail for falsely imprisoning a male escort by handcuffing him to a wall and beating him with a metal chain.
Oh, no.
I remember this. I'm president of the Boy George fan club.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You are.
So, yeah, you got to put that in the movie. Maybe
whatever happened
couple
to the
times.
Rest of Culture Club, too? They get short shrift.
Right.
That's like being Andrew Ridgely in Wham.
Right. That's an even better
guy.
Movie. The rest of the Culture Club.
I'd rather see a Culture Club movie. What if Culture Club got together with Andrew Ridgely?
Oh, yeah.
All the other, like all the forgotten people.
Right.
And they
Garfunkel.
Got together.
Garfunkel.
Yeah. And it was just a movie of all the forgotten people.
Right.
All the B-list.
Dean, I will talk to Brian Dunkelman from American Idol, the host that got let go after the first season, and see if he wants to produce this movie.
Yeah, he probably should be in it.
The Crickets? Buddy
yeah.
Holly's
yeah.
Crickets
just the
could
crickets.
Be in it?
Yeah.
Oh, that's a great idea.
Yeah, a bunch of guys working on a dock.
I want in. All right, Dean Richards is here. One of the movies coming out this week is great. The other is horrible. Find out which is which. That's coming up in just a minute or two. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Our guest is Dean Richards. He's talking movies with us. Dean, as you said, one of the movies coming out tomorrow is great. The other is horrible. Which is which?
Well, let's start off with the great one.
All right.
Which is Rocket Man, the Elton John biopic that stars Kingsman standout Taron Egerton as Elton. He looks like him. He sounds just like him. He does his own singing in the movie, unlike Rami Malek in Bohemian Rhapsody, where there was some vocal assist involved. Taron developed a style that sounds exactly like Elton John. And has the mannerisms down. I mean, just really has the whole thing nailed. But that's only part of what makes this movie great. Unlike Bohemian Rhapsody, which was told in a straight chronology, this happened when he was young, and then this happened later in his life, and then this happened even later in his life, and so forth, the Rocket Man movie kind of bounces around a little bit and uses Elton John songs, not in a straight chronological order, but uses them where they are appropriate to enhance whatever moment in the story is being told, from Elton as a child prodigy to a young rock and roller, kind of almost like a Buddy Holly-like kind of musician, slowly developing, slowly changing, developing his flamboyant style, struggling with drugs, struggling with his own sexual identity, struggling with an extremely dysfunctional family, extremely dismissive father, a very absent mother. It tells the full story, but tells it as if you were watching a stage musical. It kind of bounces around that way, which I found very refreshing and very creative. The movie is fun. It's loaded with one song after another, which I think for most of us comprise the soundtrack of our lives.
Yep.
I mean, we all grew up with those Elton John songs and can relate particular moments in our personal lives with what was happening when we were hearing Elton John playing on the radio at the time. I love the movie. I love the way that Dexter Fletcher, the director who completed the Bohemian Rhapsody after the original director on that film was fired, he takes over this movie and does it in a completely different style, in a very refreshing, wonderful. It's different. People are asking, is it better than Bohemian Rhapsody or not? I don't know if I can really say that, but it's done differently, and the movie is extremely satisfying. So I gave it a Dean's List A. I really liked it.
Dean, Taron Egerton, not just playing Elton John, but as you mentioned, he's doing the actual singing. How did that play out? Because would he have still gotten the job if he didn't sound exactly like him too, or was that part of the process by which they chose him?
I think that must have been part of the process by which they chose him. You know, certainly it wouldn't be the first time that an actor took a role in which singing was involved, and either they didn't sound like what they were supposed to sound like or sounded horrible and were just completely overdubbed by somebody else. I think that Taron Egerton would have gotten it anyway, because he's got the physical attributes that are so important to this and mannerisms. He obviously studied Elton John quite a bit to get all the physical characteristics down. But I think it helped a lot that he was able to sing, and he was it's not only that he's able to sing, but he was able to match Elton John's vocal stylings and his characteristics, and it's very, very subtle, but he nails it 100%, just turns in a fantastic job on it.
And Rami Malek, in my opinion, he had Freddie's mannerisms down, and there were moments he looked like him, but he almost looked more like Mick Jagger sometimes. So if they were going for like a dead-on thing, and he didn't even sing this stuff.
Right.
Yeah, and not that I was an Elton John expert in any way. I guess I knew the basics about Elton John, but I also learned quite a bit about his life, of growing up, how it is that he came to be. What's really poignant in the movie is his relationship with Bernie Taupin, the other half of the songwriting team that developed all of these, you know, most of these, 99% of these great songs that we know from Elton John. The words were written by Bernie Taupin, and Elton John went and wrote the music surrounding them. Their relationship is a really beautiful one, a really nice friendship. So I wound up learning quite a bit out of this whole thing, and loved the music.
You know, I can't wait to see it.
You know, and sang along.
All right, that's on the positive side, Rocket Man. Now get to the negative side, and that's Godzilla, King of the Monsters, right?
Godzilla, King of the Monsters.
That looks so good. I'm sorry. It really does in the trailers.
Well, you know, I'm sure there are going to be some people who love it. I went into this wanting to love it, but, you know, first and foremost, the story that they've written for this film is pretty ridiculous. Now, it's a Godzilla movie.
Yeah.
I'm not looking for, you know, as some kind of literary masterpiece here.
Right.
I get that it's a Godzilla movie, but it is, even for a Godzilla movie, the storyline is ridiculous. That is coupled with acting that makes William Shatner look downplayed. That's the kind of acting that we get in every single, practically every single character in this movie. It's so overplayed. And again, I get it's a Godzilla movie. I wasn't expecting anything Academy Award winning.
Yeah.
But, you know, at some point I had to, you know, stop dismissing things that were ridiculously stupid in this movie. And just, you know, when I started to write things down, when I was writing the review, I was like kind of putting together all the little notes that I'd made and things in my head that I noticed and wanted to talk about. It's like, there are a lot of things wrong with this movie. And those are just a couple of them. One of my pet peeves with big action movies like this is where it's fast cut, so fast and so jerky that it's very difficult to see what's going on. To me, that's a director's technique of, this is how I'm going to hide the deficiencies in this movie.
Sure.
by making things move so quickly and so fast that you can't see what the hell's going on in this movie. And I think that's part of what this is. And then I don't know if they had a fog machine that, you know, they weren't comfortable with the amount of distraction they put in with the quick cutting, that there was a, you know, it's foggy and murky and it's difficult to see and at times difficult to understand what's going on. It was just one thing after another that, you know, the monsters are, when you can see them,
yeah,
they're kind of cool. I can't really say that there are any spectacular moments, between, you know, with Godzilla himself, or there, it's sort of a Japanese, monster Avengers team of some of the, you know, some of the greatest, you know, Mothra.
Your favorite prehistoric monsters.
Rodan. They all appear in this movie, and sometimes they are a force against the humans, and sometimes they are fighting and trying to destroy, each other. I left so disappointed from this movie. So I'm giving it a Dean's List D-.
D-. Yeah. For Godzilla, King of the Monsters. Dean says, go see Rocket Man. That's your movie of the week.
That's the one.
Dean, thanks so much. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Richards.
All right.
You know, I didn't bring this up with Dean, but I'll bring this up to you. And I mentioned this once when I was doing the night show and people got furious.
Uh-oh.
There's never been a good Godzilla movie.
There really hasn't. Good.
Well, I mean, I know everybody goes to movies for different reasons. I get that. And the old ones, the original ones, were done on a shoestring budget. And you can see
you
that
can
they
tell.
Were model buildings that a guy in a Godzilla suit was stomping on, you know, and they would make fake explosions and stuff. But then even when the technology caught up with it, every couple of years they bring back, somebody tries this, they try to make a Godzilla movie. They're never good. And I always watch them going, maybe this will break it. Maybe this will be the one that they finally figure out how to do it. It just never works.
See, because I saw the previews for this and the special effects looked
pretty
good. They
look pretty good.
Great.
Right. Right.
But, you know.
But have you ever sat through one and at the end you feel like, oh, that was worth my time. That was an interesting story and fun to watch. It always comes up empty. Now, the one that Dean was referencing earlier with all the other monsters, you know, with all
yes.
the prehistoric monsters, there was a movie called Destroy All Monsters that came out that had Godzilla and Mothra and Rodan in it and all the other guys. You
the
know,
Lepus?
That, yeah, they
the
were
giant,
in it.
Really? The yeah, giant rabbits?
Minions were in it. That one was actually pretty good, but again, it depends on what you're looking for. But every time they remake a Godzilla or they start over with Godzilla, I always watch it and I always go, why do I keep falling for this? They're never good.
Well, are they supposed to be good?
Yeah.
They're supposed to be campy and entertaining.
Right. But they should play that up more then. It should almost be like self-parody. They should give in to the fact that it's not going to be great.
Yeah, but what do you want, like Godzilla to stop and do, like, you know, look at the camera and do yeah, a joke like
right.
Michael Scott?
Right. Yes.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, you make the next
do
one.
Do you know what American actor they put into the first Godzilla movie to make it more palatable to the U.S.? Raymond Burr. Like, they shot it in Japan, and then they went, I don't know if this will sell in the United States. We better take a guy that everybody loves, and they threw in Raymond Burr in the first one.
All right, well, Eric Rungel have your news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, but we are going to go to the stream. So